This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Welcome to the School of Influence podcast, where the queen and king of influencer marketing, authors and professors Amanda Russell and Neil Schaefer, cut through the noise and dissect what makes brands and professionals influential. No fluff, just the real deal.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the School of Influence podcast. As always, we're in for a very special guest who this is the first time that I am virtually meeting him, but I know he's going to uncover some new realities about not just influencer marketing, but digital influence. I can't wait to dive into this conversation. Amanda, please do us the honor of making the formal introduction to today's guest.
Thank you. I am really happy to introduce Shep Ogden to our podcast this week, and someone totally different than would you usually hear from or that we've even had before, which I think is worth listening to. He is the CEO and co-founder of Offbeat Media Group, and he has worked in a very short period of time, has worked with some of the fastest growing brands, has been a part of some of the most incredibly, what you consider, I guess, like maybe even viral campaigns. His passion is really literally about building online influence. Shep, I'm really happy to have you today. As I said earlier, before our podcast started, you spoke to one of my classes, and it was one of the most captivating classes we've had from a guest. So I know this episode is going to be awesome. So thank you, first of all, for being here. And you know, tell me a little bit, you know, if you'd like to introduce yourself and just talk a little bit about what it is that you do.
Yeah, no, thanks so much for having me on. I'm really excited to chat today. Yeah, so Offbeat Media Group, we're essentially, you know, we started off as a network of large social audiences. So for example, we own and manage the account Humor on Instagram, H-U-M-O-R, with about 4 million followers in puberty, like teenage puberty with 2.3 million followers. And leveraging those two, you know, large publisher brands, we've been able to build up a network of about 1,600 or so other meme publishers, is really what they are, theme publishers that focus on things like gaming and sports and cooking and fitness, you know, really across the board to help brands reach this hard to reach Gen Z audience. We connect the dots, we help them really become pros in meme marketing, and we kind of handle that from full funnel. That's been the last, you know, 5 or so years of our business. And now we're really moving more towards saying, hey, we've been promoting these big brands. We've helped build audiences for these big brands. Can we create more of our own original content where we grow it and we launch shows and social shows and even virtual influencers with the launch of virtualhumans.org? And so, yeah, just kind of pivoting now from this network-driven company to owning more of our own content is a big focus of ours.
It's so interesting. What you guys do is essentially what every, you know, the stereotype of the term like social media influencer wants to do, which is build an engaged following to break through all of that noise and whatever, you know, and attention craziness. And it's very hard to do that, you know, organically. And yet you've managed to do it for multiple brands that are not even just people, but you know, whether it's memes or virtual or brands or whatever it is. What is the magic formula? What do you think are some of the tips of like that has gotten you to be able to break through on so many levels? And you've done it time. And I'm sure there's some fails in there, too. But what are some of the key things that have helped you that now you see, having looked at so many, that you're like, these are the things that we definitely look for and we breed and we nurture?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. You know, I think one of the things that really kicked us off into more of this original content too, which we're growing a lot of audiences around, is we kept hearing things like content is king, right? And if you can create really good content or really shareable content, you're going to grow an audience. I typically disagree with that. So I think it really, you know, whenever you're creating audiences or you're creating great content, you have to have a distribution plan. We say this to our clients all the time. They might have the funnest idea in the world. They might have the best campaign idea in the world. They might have the funniest memes in the world. But if you don't have a way of getting people to see that content, you're not going to build an audience. And so for us, whenever we think about content, we think about, great, how many people can we get this in front of and how quickly? And then we measure things like shares and comments and like how much conversation is this content starting? And if it's starting a conversation, that'll typically lead to followers. And that's how we look at it. And like you said, we've had failures and we've had good successes.
I want to take a step back, Shep, and just over the last few years, you know, you talk about Gen Z, and we've seen new channels emerge, new types of media emerge. And it sounds like you're really at the forefront of that, right? For a brand to just get out there on TikTok or do a reel is not the easiest thing for a lot of different reasons. So I'm sure there's a huge demand for what you do. I want to take a step back into meme marketing. So Amanda, you know, teaches at University of Texas. I teach sometimes at Rutgers Business School. And you're not going to find meme marketing in the textbook of a digital marketing course, right? So for those, and obviously meme marketing, I think, is very B2C focused. There might be some B2B plays. I don't know. Can you go into, just take a step back, what exactly is meme marketing and why is it important and what can businesses do to really take advantage of that, other than obviously, you know, hooking up with your company and getting some advice?
Yeah. So this is funny. This was not an intentional plug, but we recently launched MemeMarketing.org, which dives super deep into that exact topic because of what you just said. There is not a profession of meme marketing. There are no courses on meme marketing. And we realize that there's a lot of people doing it and there's a lot of big businesses being built around meme marketing. And so whenever we think about memes, you know, in definition, a meme is something that can very quickly be recreated with someone adding their own spin to it. So you think of TikTok videos. Those are a type of meme. You think of like engaging use cases of an interactive lens on Instagram or Snapchat. That's a cool meme. And then you have the traditional, you know, white border meme or like video that looks like the typical meme. The most important thing about leveraging something like meme marketing is the fact that you're creating content that's going to natively integrate into a feed and hopefully be picked up and reshared by an audience. That's what's really, really cool about it and why it's been so impactful is because hopefully, you know, if you're working on a campaign that you hope a million people will see it, 10 million people actually see it because the content just looks like something that somebody wants to share. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. So, I mean, yeah. So I think that a lot of people would just, the meme is that, you know, the visual, you know, the white border, the same picture, but did lots of different things. Oh, you know, tell me more about that. I mean, there's all these ones that are out there, but you take it one step further, say it's a remix. And therefore, you know, I was just introduced to a TikTok influencer search platform where, hey, these are the influencers that are actually doing dance routines to this song. So when you do a dance routine to that song, it's part of that remix. You're adding to it, but then people interested in that dance may find your content. Is that sort of the idea?
Yeah, exactly. Like, let's go back to like Baby Yoda, the meme, the Baby Yoda meme. And it's like, you saw like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 really cute pictures of Baby Yoda. But then you saw Baby Yoda where he would apply to a joke about finance, but then he would also apply to a joke about parenting. And so like Baby Yoda in this instance, like that is the meme. And then everyone can put their own spin on that type of content. So with us, we're trying to think about, okay, great. We've got this really viral moment with Baby Yoda. How do we integrate a brand into this topic? That's really what we're looking for. And then if we can get that talked about and shared, and let's say have that brand be the centerpiece of that meme, kind of integrate into it, other people will start making their own types of comments around it. Another really cool example where we saw this work really well was, you know, Bird Box with Netflix. It became a huge meme with everyone was blindfolded, making their own videos, and they're running into walls. And it was all about the movie where you were essentially blindfolded if you wanted to survive. And it's just a cool way where like that content and that concept just super, you know, organically integrated into meme culture.
So just to follow up on that, why do you think brands struggle? Do they not understand the importance of it? Lack of creativity? They're just not in tune with the generation? I'm sure it's a combination, but what's your take?
I just got off a phone call about this, and it's something that I talk about a lot with my team and with brands, but we're seeing just a transformative time in types of content, where so many brands come in and so many production companies come in and entertainment companies come in, and they think a high produced piece of content is what's going to perform well. You know, we get all the smartest people in the room, the directors, the producers, best videographers, et cetera, and we're going to create a super high end piece of content, and then we're going to release it everywhere, and it's going to do really, really well. And that just doesn't seem to work anymore. People on social, they want two things. One, they want more raw and authentic type of content. So you really want to see some of the motion, but they also, they want it to seem like it was actually built for that platform. So for TikTok, you shouldn't be necessarily using the same, you know, cut of a video for TikTok and YouTube and Twitter and Instagram. You should be creating, you know, your own edits for each platform. And so that's whenever I see brands, you know, failing, they're not looking at it from a platform specific strategy, and they're typically overproducing the content. One great quote I read the other day is like, you know, an Instagram account that you're following, you know, by a brand, is it typically one that just talks about the product and their brand? No, it's typically something that either shows you how people are using their product, or gives good reviews, or it's funny and it's humorous, and they're actually appealing to you and making you want to follow it, not just showcasing the brand every single post.
Would that not be considered great content? Like, I'm sorry, I'm just playing devil's advocate here, because I'm with you on this whole, I that's like the first thing I tell a lot of my students is like, content is not king. If it can't get seen, it doesn't matter. But would your argument then be that is good? What is good content now is just changed?
Yes, it is still great content. If I said that, then I'll take that one back. But it's the type of production budget that I think really matters here. You look at a meme, and a meme might not even be formatted correctly. Sometimes we'll intentionally have like the text copy on a meme be two different fonts, and it just looks super, you know, low budget, and like a 14-year-old just kind of put this together. That's intentional. A lot of these, you know, bigger production companies or bigger brands, they spend all of this money creating a super high produced video, and then it just doesn't get shared on social because it just looks overly produced. It looks like the old school, you know, TV commercial that you would have seen. One other cool way of thinking about it too, and this is what we try to think about with all the content we're pushing out, is can an audience or a consumer interact with this ad? So with a TV commercial, they consume it. That's it. With a meme, they laugh. They share. With a lens, they put it on their face and they can actually be the brand. They can wear the brand. With a TikTok video, they join in the trend and they make their own spin on it. It's really important, in my opinion, to give fans now a way to actually interact with your brand, not just consume and watch it. So I think that's also an interesting take on meme marketing.
And actually, Neil asked a question earlier that got me thinking about something, which is he asked, why are brands not doing this? My immediate answer when you say that is because I think a lot of brands don't know how to use it, you know, how to integrate it. And so how could they integrate it? And not just for like the sake of like buzz, like could you give an example of how a brand could use it to actually convert, you know, to their brand in a bigger way, whether it's sales or whether it's whatever the objective is?
Yeah.
It's just like, I think a lot of times we get caught in this, we confuse attention with influence, where we're like, yeah, let's just get a bunch of impressions. Let's just get a bunch of all kinds of buzz. And then the CFO is like, and how did that help our bottom line?
Right. The easiest way for a brand to hop on something like this is really by monitoring the conversation and pushing it forward. So some brands are able to spark a trend and spark a conversation from scratch. That's incredibly powerful. That's incredibly influential. Other times, you're going to see comments that keep repeating. You're going to see a song that's kind of related to your brand start popping off on TikTok, for example. Or you're going to see a meme like Baby Yoda that just magically pops up. And for a brand to really take advantage of that, they should be taking those memes, taking those trends, et cetera, and amplifying further. You know, getting rights to that content and then taking it to, you know, Facebook ad marketplace or Facebook's, you know, ads. We don't do Facebook ads, but you know, doing Facebook ads on those contents to take it further, right? That's how we think about it. You know, from a brand being able to just jump in, it's like look for the conversation, and then being able to figure out a way to amplify it, you know, to a bigger way. You know, partner with more influencers, partner with meme pages, you know, do Facebook ads, whatever that is. But take what's already working and just make it go further. That's usually what we recommend. Does that answer your question? Does that make sense?
I think so. Yeah. I think so. So you're the agency they come to that pretty much is like almost like modern day advertising agency, in that you create the thing that people interact with and love, and then they have, and it's up to them to take it and know their objectives of what they want, how they want to use that to convert.
Well, we'll help them get it out there. That's the bulk of what we do. Lots of the time, someone will have like a campaign activation or idea, and then we'll put our own, you know, kind of meme spin on it to make it more shareable, and then we'll help, you know, distribute it and get it out there for someone. Another interesting tactic that we've seen a lot is whenever there is a viral trend already happening on TikTok or on Instagram, you know, just being quick to jump on that trend. That's a great way to be culturally relevant in the meme culture. McDonald's did a really good example of that with the obelisk meme, if you guys remember that just kept popping up everywhere. And the next thing you know, they turned it into one of their speakers outside of the drive-thru. And it was just right there in the middle of the desert. And it was as if it was them doing it all along. And that's a really fun play on something going viral that, you know, they got activated within 24, 48 hours, and it hit the audience really well. So I think those are kind of the two ways of brands thinking about meme marketing in a good light.
I think what's really interesting is that in the early days of social media marketing, viral was just shares. How many times that Facebook post gets shared or the YouTube video got shared? What you're talking about now, and maybe it's a different generation, different platforms, but it is more interactive. It is more cultural, and therefore that viral aspect isn't necessarily just a share button, but you're seeing it in people repurposing your content, people taking your meme and doing something with it, and even, you know, offline as well. So it really sort of redefines what viral is, doesn't it?
Right. Exactly. I think shares are a great metric to track. You know, I think they're a great way of saying this is working or this isn't working. If no one's sharing your content, you're definitely not going to go viral. But if people are really getting a high share rate on this content you produced, you have a high likelihood that people are going to create similar content.
And switching gears a little bit in terms of talking influence in a different way, but in terms of B2B influence, I saw that Mark Cuban invested in you guys, or is one of your investors, as well as, I think, is it Atlanta Ventures? Okay. And the reason I bring that up is because we talk a lot about, influencer marketing in the B2B space. And one of the prime ways to, examples I use is, well, how do you raise money? Well, when you get somebody like Elon Musk or like Mark Cuban, like that is an influencer. And it's like once somebody, like, it's not just, well, these are people, but certain people, certain companies that invest in you, that is going to increase your own influence. And all of a sudden, there's all this more traction to you. How did you, for all of the entrepreneurs and small businesses out there that are like, how did you do that? How did you appeal to get a big name investor on board with you? What would be some of your, like, was it a personal relationship that you, I mean, obviously it's never a handout, but I should retract saying that. But I mean, I feel like a lot of times a relationship like that is built on trust. And how did you come about that? Because you guys are a young, really smart, really cool team, but I'm sure he's got a million incoming, right? So what was the thing there? What was the big connection?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I think Atlanta Ventures specifically said not to share this because it isn't that process you just said. You know, we've been focused on creating great content, and now with virtualhumans.org, creating a great hub for all things virtual influencers. And Mark Cuban actually reached out to us and said he was really excited about what we were building. And so we made a decision that we weren't going to raise capital last year because we were profitable. But yeah, whenever someone like Mark Cuban, that influential, you know, knocks on your door, you definitely take that call. And that's where Atlanta Ventures was like, hey, it's not supposed to be that easy. So don't tell anyone, that it's that easy sometimes. But no, I mean, for us, that was really what it was. It was, we found a really interesting niche and we started building around it. And we were the only people really building in the virtual influencers and virtual human space as thought leaders. And doing that has brought a lot of people in our direction. I mean, we've had a lot of possible investors reach out and a lot of partners reach out. And whenever, you know, like I said, someone like Mark Cuban reaches out, he's definitely someone that we wanted to get involved with. And like you said, he's been extremely influential and helped connect and open doors for us all along the way. So any advice I can give, though, it's really just finding that niche, finding something that, you know, you can own and you can be thought of as the people that do this. And then once you are, if other people see that as an opportunity, they're going to reach out to you. And so that might not be typical advice, but that's how it worked for us so far.
I like that. That's really interesting. Yeah, you were smart. I mean, smart, right? Because it's. I understand the not wanting to take investment, but it's like I'd rather have 50% of a way bigger mountain than 100% of a medium sized one. So very cool.
Right. Exactly. The way we look at it is just like, you know, right now we're, I don't know if it's thankfully or not thankfully, we're in a market where capital can be found if someone needs capital. And so it's really about like, where are you getting that capital that I think is most important? Are these investors or advisors or partners or anyone like that, are they going to be able to help push your business forward? Are they going to be able to help you, you know, figure out problems? Are they going to be able to help, you know, open doors? Are they going to be able to help bring you business? And if the answer is yes to at least one of those, you know, it can be worth the conversation. If it's not, then, you know, go get a loan. If it's not going to be strategic money, I don't think it's worth it in this time because there is a lot of money out there. And so it's just being, you know, more tactical about the money you actually take because, you know, they always say it, but like an investment is like marriage, right? Like we're not just going to stop talking with Mark or any of our other investors tomorrow. We're going to be talking to them for the next, you know, many years, if not the rest of our lives. So that's kind of how we look at it.
Yeah, I want to dive a little bit deeper into something you said. So we started out with memes. I'm assuming these were like Instagram static images. You created some, you know, great accounts. Obviously now we have TikTok, we have Instagram Reels, you've had Snapchat filters, what have you. It all gets more interactive. And then you talked a little bit there about virtual influencers. And you said that was one of the reasons that Mark Cuban, you know, gave you guys a call. So at some point, you chose to get active in that market. But not only that, you also were able to make a name for yourselves to the point that Mark Cuban would find out about you, right? So maybe that might answer Amanda's question. But I also want to get into what exactly is, for those that are not familiar, and why you're investing in that by creating this new site, our virtual influencers.
Yeah, absolutely. I think checking out virtualhumans.org is a great way for anyone listening to see that. But in short, a virtual influencer is the 2021 version of what used to be a animated character or, you know, storyline in a film, where these virtual influencers are being created by CGI, you know, to tell stories online. They're literally built to, you know, build audiences, create audiences, push brands, push, you know, push their own songs, but really to push a storyline, you know, build a fan base, just like you would see with a typical influencer or celebrity. And where I really think it's getting really interesting is that, you know, these virtual influencers, you'll never meet them in person. But then I've had people ask, well, yeah, and that maybe I can't connect with them because you can't meet them in person. But then you start thinking about it, and how many YouTube influencers, how many celebrities, et cetera, have you actually met in person? And so if 99% of the time you're consuming content from a phone or a TV, you know, what's the difference? You know, at the end of the day, if it's a really good storyline to follow, you know, people are tapping into these virtual influencers every day.
I love that. And I have to say that when they first started, there was like controversy over whether they were real. And I'm like, how many people watched like Little Mermaid when they were like, and like these, all the Disney, I mean, that's what Disney was. And these were, that's exactly, I'm like, how were we talking about the ethics of a virtual influencer versus, but we've watched animation for so long,
right?
That's the people behind it. And then also, if you take like, I mean, look at the filters on Instagram. Do we really think that Kim Kardashian looks anything? Plastic surgery, filters, makeup. I mean, how is that? Is that really real too, what we're seeing? So I think that conversation is kind of like ridiculous. But in terms of the virtual influencers, what do you think is the future of sort of like our brand? Do you think it's safer for brands to go with a virtual influencer because that can be sort of controlled on the back end? Or would that be more, are we all just going to be virtual now?
So I'll hit this from a few angles. I'll backtrack to what you said a second ago, where I think the reason people are uncomfortable with virtual influencers is because they're coming through a medium that they don't expect there to be something fake. So you're used to watching TV and watching these animated storylines, or watching Thor, you know, with Marvel. You're used to hearing these fictional storylines. But on Instagram, on TikTok, on Snapchat, on Twitter, you're used to seeing your friends and family and influencers that you follow. And so now you're saying, hey, this fictional storytelling is blending in your real life. And that's what makes people feel uncomfortable. And so for some brands, it's not the best fit. Let's say, for example, a makeup line. you know, how do you tell that genuine story of, you know, this makeup makes me feel, you know, beautiful inside and makes me look beautiful on the outside. How do you tell that with a virtual human? I don't think it pairs too well. However, if you're going after, you know, a younger audience that's maybe more of a gaming audience, this is a perfect way of extending that brand. For example, we saw Riot Games do this really well with League of Legends and their band KDA. KDA is a band that a virtual influencer band that they launched in game, but then extended to Instagram and to YouTube and to Spotify. And it's now pushing over 1 billion streams and is its own platform. That's now pulling people, you know, inside, but as well as extending their brand. So it really just kind of depends on the types of brands going after them. Did you have any other questions? Did I miss one?
Yeah, no, that would help me.
Yeah. And it's sort of it seems like an extension of the whole anime. I mean, I love it. It's like modern day Disney, but I think of Miku Hatsune. So my wife is Japanese. I do a lot of business. And me, I mean, that is a virtual influencer that does live concerts, right? And that attracts tens of thousands of people. So I guess it was only a matter of time before you extended that to social media. And I just had a look at virtualhumans.org and some like $1 billion investment that some company's doing. So for certain audiences, I think it makes a lot of sense. And it's really a sign of the times. And maybe, you know, older executives at more traditional companies worry about the ethics. But at the end of the day, the people consuming it are probably going to accept it. And they already are accepting it without us even realizing it.
Yeah. To your point earlier about filters, right? Like we're living in a world filled with filters. I mean, half the pictures you send on Snapchat aren't of your face just by itself. It's with a filter on it. It's with a lens on it. But another thing is we're seeing a massive increase in the usage of avatars and Bitmojis and things like that, where people are communicating and talking through GIFs and through Bitmojis and through their avatars. And why wouldn't we see that transition into virtual humans, right? Like into this digital, you know, this digital version of ourselves. Like I think right now people have some barriers of that, but I think it's very quickly changing because of people like Hatsune Miku. I think I might have said that wrong.
No, that's the right way to say it. That's the Japanese. Yeah. you got it.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, you see things like that. And lots of the times they say media trends are just faster in Asia. You know, they're happening there and they start moving over here. And you're seeing a massive, massive just land grab right now and virtual talent and virtual celebrities and across the entire Asian market. That we're just now starting to see here in America with things like FN Mecca and Little Michaela, you know, and a few other Super Plastics, you know, universe of characters they're creating. This stuff is starting to move here and they're getting millions of followers really quickly.
And soon they're going to have their own managers too.
Oh, yeah.
We interviewed a manager last week to add influencer managers. So on the
influencer agent, right? Virtual influencer agent.
Yeah. I guess that is the company. You are the agent as well.
Yeah, we definitely have helped connect brands with other virtual influencers in the past for sure.
So can brands come to you for, what would be their objective in coming to you? Do they come and say, we just want a campaign to increase sentiment, awareness. We want our own virtual influencer. We want our own meme. We want our, what are the kinds of things that brands typically reach out? What would they be searching for when they come to you?
Yeah. So we can't really talk about the virtual influencers that we've created with brands. But for some specific brands where it makes a lot of sense and we know it's going to win, you know, we'll help them do that. You know, we'll help them either create their brand, create their virtual influencer, or connect them with a team that can do it. Alternatively, we can also connect the dots for any virtual influencer they're trying to get in touch with. We've spoken with pretty much every team now across the industry. That's what's been really cool about building virtualhumans.org is we've got to, you know, network, connect, meet, learn from all of these different industry leaders. And at this point, we're able to help someone, you know, activate in the space. We can also help educate them as to why they should be, you know, activating in this space and interested in this space. Those are, I'd say, some of the big reasons why somebody would reach out to us for virtual humans specifically.
So if there's a brand listening to this podcast and they're like, I'm sold, but before I reach out to Shep and his team, I want to just sort of test the waters. How would you even go about, you know, starting to launch a virtual influencer? Any advice?
Yeah, that's a great question. So this is something that we've been working through that playbook right now. And I think there's two great ways for testing the waters, you know, outside of them really understanding who their target audience is. But number one is either sponsor short-term or long-term a current live virtual influencer. and see how well, you know, their fan base interacts with your brand. Because a lot of followers across the virtuals, you know, follow other virtual influencers too. And so if you're getting good engagement and getting the type of results you want from that, then it can make sense to invest. Another thing is, like we talked about earlier, knowing how you're going to get your virtual influencer out there is really important. So testing those forms of advertising prior. So if you're working with us, you know, we would be recommending things like TikTok and meme marketing and, you know, areas like that. Make sure that your audience is in the meme industry. You know, do a meme campaign, do a TikTok campaign. And if you're getting traction there, then maybe partner with a virtual influencer. And then if that works too, say, great, I'm ready to spend six figures on this. Let's invest into our own virtual influencer and fully own this narrative and constantly have, you know, in a way, a digital billboard. So that's kind of how to step stone into it, I'd say.
That's great advice. Thank you.
Last question. So how do you convert, like, just comment on this, like, attention versus influence. It's something that I struggle with in terms of the influencer marketing a lot. The difference between just like the idea of these metrics like impressions and views and shares and how that really converts into influence for a brand's purpose. What do you guys discriminate between that, or is your job really not really up to you guys what the brand's objective is in terms of their bottom line? Your job is to drive more of the attention, awareness, shareability.
Yeah. So our job is, you know, we charge on a CPM model. So we're going to say, hey, we can get you in front of 100 million 18 to 24-year-old males based in America. That's the type of thing that we would be charging for and that we would do. But then we're kind of graded on those shares, right? That's really where something like that would look towards. Did I miss some of your question?
Yeah, no, to me, that was really clarifying just in terms of it's up to sort of the brand's marketing team to decide. I think too many times we're always trying to like throw spaghetti at the wall just to get like buzz and awareness and whatever. And then we think it doesn't work when it didn't increase your bottom line. But if you didn't go into it with the end objective in mind, then it doesn't matter.
The way I look at it, every form of marketing that we do is a really great value add for a full funnel marketing strategy. You know, if you have a really good paid performance plan where you're driving a lot of, you know, installs or acquisitions, you're going to need more traffic at the top. And the more people can resonate with your brand, find it culturally relevant, see it in the day-to-day, the easier that lower funnel gets. And so that's really where a lot of our clients have come to us. They say, hey, we know how to get installs, or we know how to get acquisitions, we know how to get someone to buy something, but we just need more people knowing about us. And then it's like, great, well, this is one of the easy ways to get shared in front of tens, if not hundreds of millions of people worldwide. And that's usually how we think about this funnel of marketing, is just helping a brand get talked about at scale. And then, you know, we're not necessarily, you know, going to be doing their paid performance plan, driving that final install or that final acquisition. That would be more up for their, you know, that's a performance agency or their internal team. We're driving a ton of traffic, getting a lot of shares and sparking a conversation.
That's super clarifying. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Neil, did you have anything else?
No, I mean, I was just going to remark as well on that. I think for brands, they're not relevant in social media with the way that they publish content, right? It looks like blatant advertisement. So, you know, before this call, I would have said influencer marketing is the way to do that, is through relevant voices to get the word out there, to incite word of mouth marketing. And obviously today we can now add meme marketing to that as a way to incite that word of mouth. That is not going to happen. And paid media does not incite word of mouth either. So I think for a lot of brands that probably work with you, Shep, as well as influencer marketing on the B2C side, it really is about relevance and word of mouth and brand awareness. And I think that most CMOs would understand that ROI, and you measure it through impressions, right? So imagine what their organic gets and how much they pay to get how much impressions, what you can get them in a much more relevant way coming from trusted voices that are already out there, or trusted forms of medium that they're used to engaging with that brands aren't creating. So to me, it all makes sense.
Yeah, that's I completely agree. And that's one of the cool things. And last thing I kind of say on that form of meme marketing that makes it really unique compared to typical influencer marketing. You know, if you're doing a large scale influencer campaign, you're going to partner with a few hundred influencers. You're going to have so much back and forth in terms of their content. So many of them aren't going to get what you want. But with meme marketing and working with large scale publishers that have millions of followers and a trusted audience already, like we mentioned, you can create content that, or, you know, someone like us that understands the voice of those pages can create content up front, have that content approved by the brand, and that's it. Those pages are going to be able to post it. There's no back and forth with them. So long as we create it in the voice of their publisher brand, they'll post it, and there's no real, you know, quality control whenever you think of it in that way.
You're basically talking about, like, what you guys are doing is creating the future of marketing. And as people that are coming out of, like, even their jobs where they're looking to move up in marketing or graduating from business school. And the biggest anxiety is like, there's so much pressure on what am I going to do? And this space is not a space like medicine or law where you know exactly what you're going to do. Like, what you are doing wasn't even created like a year ago or 2 years ago. So what advice would you give to somebody that's like, how did you get there? What do I do with this degree? Where should I get started?
That's a great question. I'd say I a little bit fell into this, you know, and it is by my answer of iteration. That's really my answer to all forms of media and marketing is like, you have to iterate over and over and over. A media company that's not iterating is not innovative and they will not last. That's something that we've seen. You know, we've only been officially as this company for 3 years, and our forms of marketing have changed multiple times over the last 3 years, where we constantly have to iterate and find what's working. And so anyone trying to break into the marketing field, it is about testing. It's what's working, what's driving results, and seeing what other people are doing, right? Like, what's performing well on YouTube or performing well on Instagram or TikTok, and then putting your own spin on it and just testing and testing and testing. And then sooner or later, you find something that clicks and you go all in on that. And that's kind of what we're doing now with that original content.
Yeah, I like that. And I think, you know, they used to talk about iteration. I think it's also iteration of yourself in your career. Like, I think rather than the pressure of I need to work and this is going to be the company, the title forever. It just start somewhere. And if you're doing the best at what, you know, you can possibly do, I think opportunities will arise in that.
Definitely agree.
Where can we find out more about either contacting you, more about Offbeat and some of the different things that you guys do?
Yeah, LinkedIn is probably the best place. Most of our team's really active on there. So, you know, connecting with me on LinkedIn at Shep Ogden, OGDEN, or following us on LinkedIn at Offbeat Media Group. That'd probably be the best way of keeping in touch with what we're up to. Or checking out virtualhumans.org or memarketing.org. Those two are big information hubs where we're publishing, you know, everything that we're working on and researching.
And I will say you also have a website, omg.media.
Yeah, omg.media is the website for Offbeat.
Yeah, which is a great, and you guys have some great case studies there as well. So, and you have a million different, I don't know how you keep track of all of the different everything and the content creation and everything. It's a lot and it's amazing.
Hiring great people and figuring out how to project manage those different things that are moving. The last thing I can say there is it's super nice. We are doing a lot, but all of it has a ton of synergies. So it kind of blends in together and it just adds fuel to their other fires, essentially.
So cool. It is the future. Super cool.
Yeah, awesome. Well, Shep, thank you so much. We'll put those URLs in the show notes. And I know this has been incredibly informative for Amanda and myself, and I'm sure it's going to be for our listeners as well. So any last bit of advice you'd like to give the listeners that are, if all this is new to them, just outside of obviously reaching out to you? I mean, you already mentioned iteration. Anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, I would say just watch what's happening on social. Something that I think is really going to take off, and it already is. We see the numbers that just came out, is Snapchat. I really think their focus on creators and content and just getting people on board is how they're going to win. Right now, they're doing a spotlight, if you're familiar, where they're paying just, you know, random creators around the nation $1 million a day just for creating content on the platform. It's like if you hit the algorithm like you would on TikTok, you go viral on TikTok and you get a lot of followers, but on Snapchat, you get paid $20,000. And that right there is really getting people on the platform, creating awesome content, and then awesome content is keeping people on Snapchat. And so we know some of the people at the team there. They're awesome. I just investing into that platform as a you know, as a marketing channel is something that I would recommend right now.
And it's a reminder that content isn't necessarily king, but content creators are definitely kings and queens in this new economy.
Definitely. Definitely. I think the creator economy is going to be even bigger than, you know, the social platforms. We're already seeing that with, you know, Jake Paul having boxing matches, Charlie D'Amelio, you know, having a Netflix series or a Hulu series coming out, you know, across the board, the Jake Richards starting a venture fund. It's really cool just seeing how these creators are expanding their brands. It's all launching from these platforms. So I think it's, yeah, I think it's massive.
They are the new brands.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Shep. Looking forward to seeing all the latest updates from your company and all the exciting things in store.
Awesome. Thanks so much, guys. This was fun.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the School of Influence podcast. Amanda and Neil would be honored if you spend a minute to write a review wherever you are listening to this podcast to help expose these interviews to a broader audience. Make sure you hit the subscribe button so you don't miss out on future episodes. Even better, build your influence and ours by sharing this podcast on your favorite social media with hashtag School of Influence. We would love to hear from and engage with you.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.